following podcast is brought to you by the Communications and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. I'm DJ Moco, and this is Creasing Corners. Grab a drink, get cozy, and get ready to read between the lines. Sometimes dead is better. Welcome to episode 5. Today we're talking about Pet Sematary by Stephen King. Since it's the Halloween season, I decided we're going to go with a horror novel, and a very well-known one at that. It's not as well-known as Stephen King's other books, such as The Shining, It, Carrie. Pet Sematary is personally my favorite one. And I haven't read a whole lot of them. I do want to keep reading them. I think I've expanded to different genres. But as a creative writer, I think my focus really is in fiction, horror, and fantasy, and sci-fi here and there. This is also sci-fi horror. Horror movies now are just way too edited for me. I am a scaredy cat. Even though I said that I can write horror, I don't think I could write it as effectively as Stephen King or any other horror authors, but I think I could write it pretty well. It's just watching it is a whole different story. I've watched a lot of older horror movies. For example, Pet Sematary is one of them. The Mist is also a Stephen King book, which I recently just rewatched. I recently, for a class, watched The Serpent and the Rainbow, which is a movie about Haitian zombies. It's supposed to be horror. But it was just so old that all the special effects and the scary factors were not that scary. I watched a little bit of the late 1800s, I think, Nosferatu. And that was funny. I've watched a little bit of Frankenstein, Jekyll and Hyde, those movies. I recently watched Silence of the Lambs, but without really sound. It was at a Halloween potluck I went to. So, with that, in this Halloween spirit, I am not the horror girl, but I like it in writing. Writing is just so much easier to absorb. The horror movies today are scary. I don't want to see anything visually. I'll imagine it in my head. But this book did spook me out when I first read it. I read this in high school, and when I was reading one of the scary parts, I was outside in the dark on the patio with lights on, and I was a little spooked out. I didn't like being out there alone. Stephen King himself says in the book, you know, the before the actual book, the story happens, he says this is the scariest story he's ever written, which honestly I'm not sure of. I can't really compare it to much. I've only ever read The Mist, Pet Sematary, his on writing memoir. I swear I've read other ones. I started reading Rage, which is under a pseudonym, Richard Bachman. I believe that's all the novels I've read by Stephen King. No, I've read Misery, I believe over the summer, which was a stressful read. A very stressful read. Anyhow, let's get into Pet Sematary. So it was published in 1983, and it's considered supernatural horror. It's in third person, but limited, so we're only in the head of our main character, or just one character. But it does use second person language, and if you don't know what second person is when you refer to the reader as you. This story is about a family, Lewis, Rachel. Lewis is the father, Rachel's the mother, Ellie's the daughter, Gage is the baby son, and Church the cat. Some extra characters are Judd Crandall, Norma Crandall. There's also a college student that constantly reappears in Lewis's mind, and I'll explain why. This family moves to Maine, and by their house is a road with a lot of trucks. The reason why they moved to Maine is because Lewis is there for a job opportunity as a university doctor. Lewis dealt with death the first day on the job, basically. not the very first day, but he did a summer examinations with students, but this was the biggest one, and it was a student who was almost dead and then did die in his presence. So Judd, Crandall, Normal Crandall are their neighbors, and they introduce them to the neighborhood. And it's very spacious, has a lot of nature. Ellie, the daughter, is very curious about the path that goes behind their house. And Judd decides to take all of them on a trip to see what it leads to. It leads them to the pet cemetery, spelled pet, S-E-M-A-T-A-R-Y. It's spelled wrong, and I watched a video, and someone was really upset about people in titles spelling things wrong on purpose. I don't think it's a problem. I think it's fine. At this pet cemetery, Rachel is clearly upset. Ellie goes to the very back and finds this large wall of trees and brush. And Judd explains never to go past that or never mess with it because it could hurt you. Judd actually tells them that behind those trees and brush, and if you go along farther, it's the Native American ground. So that's sacred land for Native American people. And the story really climaxes when Church the cat gets run over and killed. But only Lewis sees this, and he decides to play God and bring the cat back. That is all I will be saying. This is spoiler free, so I'm not going to explain what happens later in the book, but it is terrifying. I want to talk about the writing, the figurative language, Stephen King's storytelling. Very early on, we get that second person usage. On page 40, there is a large passage where he just refers to the reader as you, as if we can relate. This is what it says. I won't be reading the whole thing. I'll just read the parts that say you, or the big chunk that says you mostly. He more than half suspected that one of the things which had kept their marriage together, when it seemed as if each year brought the news that two or three of their friends' marriages had collapsed, was a respect of the mystery, the half-grasped but never spoken idea that maybe when you got right down to the place where the cheese binds, there is no such thing as marriage, no such thing as union, that each soul stood alone and ultimately defied rationality. That was the mystery. And no matter how well you thought you knew your partner, you occasionally ran into blank walls or fell into pits. And sometimes, rarely, thank God, you ran into a full-fledged pocket of alien strangeness, something like the clear air turbulence that can buffer an airliner for no reason at all. An attitude or belief which you had never suspected, one so peculiar, at least to you, that it seemed nearly psychotic. And then you trod lightly, if you valued your marriage and your peace of mind. You tried to remember that anger at such a discovery was the province of fools who really believed it was possible for one mind to know another. It's often that Stephen King goes on these tangents that almost seem real to him or to his main character. In On Writing, his other book, his memoir, he says that he loved his wife. But maybe there is some of that passage that applied to his life. Another thing about his writing, and it's not exactly in the story, it's more before the story. He uses gospels. In part one, he has John's gospel, but it's paraphrased. It says, Jesus said to them, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go, that I may awake him out of his sleep. Then the disciples looked at each other, and some smiled because they did not know that Jesus had spoken in a figure. Lord, if he sleeps, he shall do well. So then Jesus spoke to them more plainly, Lazarus is dead, yes. Nevertheless, let us go to him. Before part two in the book, there's another gospel that refers to death, and I think it's also the same one. So we have this reoccurring image of death in this book. Stephen King does a good job at imagery while keeping action going. I think as a creative writer myself, I often struggle with keeping the pictures going in your head. Stephen King doesn't seem to have any trouble with that. I will read a small portion of this just because a lot of his paragraphs are long. He pulled himself up onto a higher branch, one which overhung the very top of the fence. He felt absurdly like the 12-year-old he supposed he had once been. The tree was not still. It rocked easily, almost soothingly, in the steady wind. Its leaves rustled and murmured. Lewis assessed the situation, and before he could get cold feet, he dropped off into space, holding onto the branch with his hands laced together over it. He's keeping the action going while also adding some similes, like the 12-year-old boy he supposed he used to be. I thought that image and several of his other images are extremely strong. That's what I admire about Stephen King's storytelling. He knows how to keep the story moving while also allowing readers to sit, to just sit with the writing and admire what was just spoken. So it's not often he does dialogue, but I think there's a healthy amount where it's absolutely placed appropriately. There's often internal dialogue as well with italicized text, which helps us imagine or at least know what our characters are thinking. So there is a lot of things that go into Stephen King's writing, and it's amazing to me that Stephen King himself has written these books within days. So Stephen King is admirable. It's just there's a lot to read. So because it's Halloween, I want to talk about the horror aspects of this story. Of course, a book is different from a movie. In a movie, you're there. It's as if you're right there. You're watching everything play out. Everything is in front of you. And that's not to say a book is not the same, but you can stop at any point. You could reread. You could do the same with a movie. You could rewind. But with a book, you're going at your own pace. You're reading, you're imagining everything in your head. It's easier to handle the horror aspects. You don't get jump scared by a book. But there are suspenseful moments, sad moments, and action-y moments. It's just, there's a lot going on all at once that it stresses you out. The suspense aspect is like, oh my gosh, what's this other character going to do about what just happened? Some characters die, and you have to deal with that because Stephen King's not nice. He does not keep people alive. There are a lot of moments in this book that I felt sad. I closed the book. I was like, oh my gosh, now I have to watch the movie. But all of it was just so stressful, and watching the movie was just the same. Allowing yourself to live in this story while being a spectator is fulfilling for reading. There's been a lot of backlash that Stephen King books, especially the horror ones, are not good for children. Obviously not little children, but high schoolers, I guess you could say. They're not really children. That's also a big argument that I want to talk about. Literature is literature. Books are books, unless they're actually bad. There's been a couple books I've read that would not be good to read if you do want to get more literate. But Stephen King is a good example of good writing. As long as you're reading something that can expand your vocabulary, I think it's beneficial. I don't think it should be taken out of libraries. If people like to consume that kind of media, that's okay. As long as it's not hurting anyone. I think if the writing is genuinely good, then you should pick up the book. And Stephen King has been commended. Stephen King has a lot of good rep. The only thing is that him as a writer, when I was reading his memoir, he cranked out these books so fast. He's prolific. He's a prolific author. He has many books out, not just horror. He has fantasy. He has fiction. He wrote a lot of these on drugs as well. And that was a big problem in his marriage, which he quickly shifted from. But to think that his brain was altered while writing these, it makes me think about what could have come out of it if he hadn't. Would he have been a worse writer or a better writer? And that's really the question. It would have the imagery needed. Everything would be placed perfectly. There's some moments where I think, okay, we didn't need all this. There's some times that I skipped over some paragraphs in other books if I reread them. And in Misery, I skipped a few because that book was long for me. Stephen King, I think, is a author I would recommend to anyone who's looking into horror. That's a good first step. I've read other horror books, But honestly, I think they could get me on a watch list or something because they're kind of horrific. I haven't picked one up since. But even if anyone says that these horror books are not beneficial for young audiences or any audience, I don't think that's true. I think the literature, the words mean something. So in the end, I'm giving this a 10 out of 10. I think it was a great book. It's a great book to read for Halloween. And I give it a big recommendation. Thank you for listening to Creasing Corners.